Chapter 9. The Void. Nadiris. As before, the human and the orc made war in a realm of energy. For an immeasurable moment, the last stop before disaster, the clash of technologies was a stalemate, and the tiniest sliver of the power was channeled in its proper path. The Homer responded as it was designed to do, and transferred the Death Watch from the orc battleship to the Herald of Night. Then the stalemate collapsed. The forces of the human and the orc technologies destroyed each other in their rage. Half the vessel's engine block vanished, disassembled past the subatomic. What remained erupted, an event far more traumatic than rupture struck the engine core. A star was cut in half. It died, howling. A shockwave produced by the severing of reality flashed across the orc fleet. The battleship vanished in a supernova cry of light. The wave blasted the nearby ships to fiery dust. Further out, it snapped escorts and cruisers in half. The wave lost force quickly as it travelled. The outer elements of the orc fleet survived, barely. Ships floated in the void without power. Atmospheres vented through huge rents in the hulls. Fires swept through entire levels, never to be extinguished. The Herald of Night emerged from the deep dark to bring judgment on what remained. The dislocation seized Thane again. The ripping apart, the disintegration of identity at one with the annihilation of reality. The transfer so much more brutal than with unmodified Imperial teleporters. In the wrench of the process came the sense of a monstrous excess of energy, of something unleashed, and of a danger to the soul. The device was bestial. It was unclean. It was also gone. Thane blinked, acknowledging his and his squad's return to being on the Herald of Night. They shook off the sickness of the translation and made for the bridge. There they joined Adnakiel, Venand, and Veritas in the Strategium. They watched the end of the orc fleet through the oculus. Veritas looked grim, disturbed by what he'd seen. Venand seemed both awed and thoughtful.
"And so it is accomplished," she said. "Five space marines have destroyed a fleet. Impressive."
"There is a cost to these actions," Forecast said. He was breathing heavily. He spoke with a great effort of calm, as if he were still struggling to hold his identity together. His fangs were bared. He kept his gaze on the deck. "The means we employed. Such things cannot be undertaken lightly."
"Agreed," said Venand. "Proper safeguards must be put in place."
Thane glanced at her sharply. She looked back, face carefully neutral. He chose not to ask her what she meant. The mission was paramount.
"What have we learned about the situation planetside?" he asked Adnakiel. "Auspex scans have confirmed the coordinates of the fortress. We have bought the defenders a little time." "No more than that? The orcs landed a large invasion force. The fortress's defenses no longer need to be aimed at the fleet, so there is no division of fire. But that will not be enough. I sense you're about to tell me something most unwelcome. We have been picking up a concentrated energy signature. The orcs have something very large approaching the fortress."
"How large?"
"To judge from these readings, a giant walking machine, an orc titan."
I was right, Thane thought. That was not welcome at all.
"Can we attempt an orbital bombardment?"
"Not with any assurance of preserving the fortress," Adnakiel said. "The orcs' intent with their bombardment was purely destructive, while ours is not."
"Understood. Thank you, Master Adnakiel."
Thane turned to the others.
"We have a siege to break and a titan to kill," he said.
The penitent Roth descended to the surface of the dark planet. The battlefield was still heated by the orc bombardment, and the temporary atmosphere was an orange-brown haze lit by the explosions of shells and the streaks of energy weapons. Cafsiel flew as low as he dared over the orcs, bringing out the details of the enemy from the great night. The region surrounding the fortress was an obscurity filled with a brutal, shifting mass. The flash of cannons illuminated the greenskins for a fraction of a second. If they knew about the destruction of their fleet,
they did not appear to be troubled by it. This was an army on the march to victory. That victory had not yet come, though, and Thane now saw how the fortress had held out for as long as it had. The keep was built at the top of a solitary peak. The mountain rose from the centre of a crater kilometres wide, as if the molten fountain from an asteroid impact had congealed back to rock in mid-flight. The slopes were steep, almost vertical, and jagged. Towering above the bowl of the crater, the fortress covered the entire peak. It was even more jagged than the mountain. It was a cluster of towers, walls fused together, rising one above the other. At the centre, the tallest spire stabbed at the infinite night. From a distance, it looked thin and sharp as a sword blade. The lower ramparts were studded with automated turrets. They rotated back and forth, cannons raining destruction on the orcs below. The greenskins raged at the base of the mountain. There was no path up. The infantry tried to climb, but was defeated by the cliffs and the punishing fire from above. They retaliated with their artillery. Hundreds of cannons and mortars battered the mountain and the fortress. They resisted. They stood fast. But the constant attack eroded the walls. It hammered at the mountainside, triggering rock slides. Given enough time, Thane thought, the mountain would be hit until there were handholds up its entire height, or the peak would be shot through and come crashing down into the crater, the fortress falling from the darkness of the sky to the darkness of the ground. Or the last orc would finally be blasted to dust by the wall guns. Given enough time. There would not be enough time. The orcs had no patience. They were bringing forth a monster to end time. The orc titan was 60 meters tall. It too was a mountain, one of iron. It lumbered across the crater, rocking side to side with each step. Its shape was squat in spite of its height. Thane pictured the walkers the last wall had fought on Caldera. This was many times larger. Its head alone was larger than the dome of Vultus. The titan was fashioned in the shape of a monstrous orc, and Thane could well imagine the machine would inspire the worship of the infantry scurrying like insects at its feet. An energy cannon emerged from the monster's right eye, turning its mere gaze into a holocaust. There were other turrets all along its shoulders and flanks, but they were not the worst danger. One of its limbs ended in another energy weapon, claw-shaped, an electrode 3 meters long between the tips. The other arm was a double-barreled cannon the size of the ones the Death Watch had destroyed on the battleship. From the centre of its bodily mass, another gun protruded, even larger. The central gun fired. The flash illuminated the entire battlefield. Thane caught a frozen glimpse of thousands of orcs exulting in the roar of their monstrous machine. The shell slammed into the mountainside. The explosion was gigantic. Boulders flew like hail. A dust cloud rose, then fell in the weak atmosphere. The mountain trembled for long seconds after the impact. The orc titan took another few steps, then fired again at the same spot. It raised its huge gun arm and let loose two more shots in quick succession. Thane was sure he saw the mountain weaken. He knew he had not. He could see little of the battlefield beyond flashes, except for those vehicles with lamps. The titan was well illuminated. It was a thing of brutish glory, and the orcs wanted it celebrated. And yet, the power of the blasts unleashed by the orc titan convinced him the fortress was not long for this world. "Take us above the titan," he told Kafsiel, "as close as you can." "So ordered." Kafsiel flew in from behind. The colossus continued its slow, steady, relentlessly destructive walk. There would be nothing left by the time it reached the mountain. As the penitent Roth closed in, Abathar said, "There, by the left-hand shoulder, a platform." "Agreed," said Thane. He turned to the Inquisitors. They wore armoured environment suits. "Are you ready?" They were to enter the citadel and speak with the Sisters of Silence. He did not relish the thought of an Inquisitor making first contact with the Order, but there was no choice. "Once the Titan is destroyed, we can coordinate the Sisters' exit from the fortress."
"You are assuming they will agree to do so," Venan said.
"I'm assuming nothing, but you know as well as I do that the Imperium needs them to agree." Venan nodded.
"They will agree," Veritas said.
I envy your certainty, said Thane.
He thought about what it meant to have obliterated the traces of their existence and to have retreated to a location so absolute in its isolation. He did not think an agreement would be easy to obtain. Cafsiel had been hailing the fortress since the penitent Roth had begun its descent. The only hint of an answer had been the appearance of a single point of illumination at the highest point of the citadel. The Thunderhawk dropped lower. Cafsiel took it in at a steep dive. Veritas and Venant were held firmly by their grav harnesses. Abathar opened the side door, and the Death Watch stood before the opening, ready to jump. There was only a slight wind. The atmosphere was beginning to freeze again. Nitrogen snow blew inside the gunship. A cold beyond words came in with it. The temperature could not reach Thane through his armor. The readouts of his auto-senses told him what it was, yet he sensed it too. The dark and the cold of the nameless world cried out with such force, it was as if there were a huge wind howling loss at the cosmos. This was a place beyond mourning, beyond the grave. Abandonment, rejection, betrayal, judgment, punishment. They were all part of the great night. They were, he thought, the very mortar of the fortress. The shoulders of the Orc Titan were broad and flat, landing pads, Thane guessed, for aircraft. They were clear, except for a single anti-air cannon at the rear of each pad. The barrels were long, stretching across half the length of the shoulders. The penitent Roth roared towards the left-hand pad. In the last moments of the approach, the orcs finally realized there was an airborne enemy in the field. The turrets began to turn. The cannons opened fire immediately when they were still facing away from the gunship. Their massive shells burst in the air, brief suns in the endless night. Cafsiel pushed the penitent Roth harder, racing against the left turret's rotation. Still behind the Titan, the Thunderhawk dropped below the shoulder, then came back up, flying level. The platform came closer. The turret was a third of the way through its rotation. In another moment, the length of its barrel would be in the gunship's flight path. Thane braced. He heard the whine of the turbofans as they began to alter the ship's trajectory. Cafsiel fired the retro nozzles, slowing the flight. The deck angled up. Thane began his leap with the landing pad still ahead. He was in the air just as the Thunderhawk passed over the edge of the Titan's shoulder. He and the squad landed, rolling off the momentum. The engine whine became a scream. The penitent Roth climbed sharply, pushing up with all the force of its turbofans. Its nose passed over the cannon. The anti-air guns fired interlocking streams of shells, but the gunship rose faster than the orcs could adjust their aim. It flew on, higher, gathering yet more speed as it made for the high spire of the fortress. Thane rose to his feet. His Death Watch brothers at his side, he ran towards the Titan's head. The platform tilted up and down with each rocking step of the weapon. The head was a massive, grimacing icon of a monstrous deity. It was surrounded by a rampart of teeth, the gaps between them like huge, clumsy crenellations. Their construction was as rough, patchwork and monolithic as the rest of the monster. Thane found plenty of handholds. Gladius climbed the teeth and dropped into the space beyond. It was wide as a town square. In the head's left eye, heavy caliber guns opened up. Their fire swept across the empty space towards the Death Watch. Close in, the fortress was just as angular and bladed as it had appeared from a distance. The towers were clusters of close-standing spikes. They made Venan think of a forest of lightning claws jutting from mailed fists. Turrets tracked the penitent Roth as it climbed the heights of the fortress. They tracked, but they did not fire.
A good sign, Venan said to Veritas.
Not the worst, at least.
The high tower had a small landing pad just below its tapered peak. It was the site of that single harsh light. Cafsiel approached it slowly. A gun mounted into the wall of the spire, followed silently. The Thunderhawk came down on the pad. Venand approached the open side door. The gun, 5 meters up, was pointed directly at her. She jumped down to the flagstones. Veritas followed her. The gun did not move. Far below, the monstrous ordnance of the Titan struck the mountainside. The tremors reached all the way up. At the other end of the platform was an iron door. In the landing lights of the Thunderhawk, it was a stark black, glinting with methane frost. Venand walked to the door. There were no handles. She stifled the impulse to knock. They know we're here, she thought. Veritas stood beside her.
Now what? She asked. Did you have a speech prepared?
Veritas shook his head. The harsh light mounted on his helmet bleached his features. The shadows of his face were deep as canyons. As he gazed at the door, so utterly closed and cold, he did not resemble the dangerous inquisitor Venand had struggled against on Terra. He did not look like the zealot who had sent assassins after her. He looked like a very old man, one who had seen too much, who stood at the brink of despair, and who had to fight hard not to fall into its abyss. No, he did not have a speech. Venand wondered again why Veritas had insisted on coming. To observe the Death Watch? Certainly. There was much to know there. There would be matters to prepare as a consequence. But here, why come to this locked door? He could have just as well waited aboard the Herald of Night. Perhaps he had come to bear witness. So had she. Though she felt another need as she stood here like a supplicant. She did not know what she should call it. She recognized the imperative, though. Even if Thane had not turned this part of the mission over to her, she would still be here. A minute passed, then another. Silence, deeper than the absence of sound, a silence of the soul, hard and cold, surrounded the tower. At last, Venand said to Veritas, "You must go." When he started to object, she interrupted him.
"You know I'm right. You can't be here."
She looked back at the penitent Roth.
"That can't remain idle here. It needs to be elsewhere. You need to not be here."
Veritas looked at her. His face was still, unreadable. His eyes were nothing but glinting black. In the end, he nodded and walked back to the gunship.
"Leave me,"
Venand voxed Cafsiel.
"Understood."
She faced the door. She didn't look as the gunship took off. Light faded. There was only her helmet lamp now. The night pressed closer. The silence gathered weight. Venand's awareness of the war faded. There was only the door and the myth behind it. She could not summon the myth. She could not make the door open, but she could wait. To stand here and meet the tower's silence with her own was the most direct action she had yet taken in this war. Then the silence changed. There was no noise in the thinning, falling, snowing atmosphere, but the silence changed. Because there was movement. Frost cracked. The shadows changed. The door opened. From the dark of the Titan's eye, massive stubber fire battered the Space Marines. They fought back with light. Forecast stretched out his arms. Light flashed from his fingers, golden and pure, a blaze of righteousness in the night. The light became a wall. It was a shimmering nobility. The orcs trained their fire onto the barrier. The shells exploded against the golden light. Forecast strained. The shield trembled, flickered for a moment, then held.
"Get beneath the guns!" Thane yelled. "They're our way in!"
The Space Marines broke left and right. Forecast stayed where he was, preserving the shield, holding the orcs' focus. Thane and Warfist went left around the wall, ran back into the dark. It was lesser. The glow of Forecast's barrier spreading over the entire open area before the Titan's skull. The Space Marines were visible to the gunners, but the barrier was the lure, dazzling them, frustrating them as it resisted their shells. On the other side of the wall, Straton and Abathar had almost reached a point directly underneath the eye turret. The barrier flickered again, buckling under the sustained fire. In another moment, Forecast would be exposed. The eye was 3 meters up the wall of the skull. Abathar fired upward with his plasma cutter. He sliced through the barrel of one of the guns. The weapon exploded. Straton threw a grenade through the socket. There was a second blast. The eye glared red at the night, blazed as ammunition cooked off, then went dark. At the base of the head, a door in the shape of a maw rose with a deafening metallic screech. Orcs boiled out of the opening. Thane and Warfist strafed them with bolter fire and hurled frag grenades into their midst. The charge stumbled into chaos, giving Forkas time to run across the space to join Straton and Abathar. Thane and Warfist kept moving and kept shooting. More and more orcs were rushing from the moor. They became a flood, and there was no more holding them back.
"We're clear,"
Straton voxed. "Go," said Thane. He nodded at Warfist, who ran the rest of the distance to the eye. Thane paused long enough to throw two more grenades into the orcs and hit them with a wide spray of shells. The orcs were lightly armored. They were the servants of their god machine, not infantry, and Thane killed many. They were also legion, and their undisciplined shots were counting. Bullets hit him, a cascade of blows driving him back.
"We're in,"
Warfist said. Thane ran. He'd bought the squad the time it needed. Now the rest of Gladius poured fire on the orcs from inside the eye, covering Thane. He maglocked his bolter to his thigh and leapt. Warfist caught his arm and pulled him inside. The turret was a space of twisted, burned metal and carbonized flesh. The doorway out was blocked. Abathar hauled the wreckage out of the way while the others fired down on the orcs as they tried to climb. Forkas created another golden shield over the opening of the eye. The orcs screamed, enraged by the desecration of their icon as well as the barrier to their weapons. Abathar had the way clear. Beyond was a narrow corridor leading deeper into the head. Thane said,
"We have to kill the greenskins that direct this abomination. Can you take us to them? I can speculate about where they might be,"
Abathar replied.
"That's all I can ask. Lead us."
Abathar plunged into the dark, cacophonous shadow. Thane followed. Straton stayed to plant a melter bomb. When the light of Forkas's shield winked out, a more searing brilliance followed. The ceiling of the turret fell in, and the eye was blinded forever. The Death Watch moved into the Titan, seeking its brain. The hall at the top of the spire was circular. Vaulted, stained glass-steel windows faced every direction. With no illumination outside the fortress, the windows were lit by their own art. The mosaics depicted warriors destroying the enemies of the Emperor. Many of the foes wore psychic hoods. Their faces were contorted grotesques, their eyes blazed with the fires of the warp, and the fires died before touching the warriors in armor of gold, of red, of black. Some of the windows depicted vessels, black against the black of the void, distinguishable only because they were outlined by the same phosphorescence that limned the figures of the other mosaics. The interior of the spire was lit the same way. The narrow pointed dome was yet another star chart. This one was of the entire Imperium, but the chart was old. It was the Imperium as it once had been, not as it was now. The faint trace Venant had seen in Vultus was sharp here as a razor to the eye. In the night of the world, the cold silver was stark, nearly blinding, and without forgiveness. The voice of the woman before Venand was just as cold, just as lacking in mercy. It was the sound of silver.
"Why have you come to Nadiris?" she said.
Answering was difficult. It was painful to be in the presence of these women. An aura of nothing, of suffocating blankness, squeezed Venand's soul. She felt as if something had murdered her unconscious mind. She was diminished. If this was her experience, she could not imagine the agony a psycho would suffer in this hall. What had Venand expected? Was it this? Was it to see the Sisters of Silence arrayed before her in this solemn amphitheatre? No. They wore dark, hooded robes, filigreed in the cold silver. They were wrapped in the void, upon its black the wordless voice of the stars and their memories of endless sacrifice. While Venant struggled to speak, they pulled back their robes and hoods. The army of silence appeared before her in armor of gold, of red, of black. Had Venant expected to face the sisterhood for the first time like this, standing in the center of the amphitheater facing judgment colder, more pure, than that of the Inquisition? No. What had she expected? She did not know, but most of all she had not expected to be alone, to know that it would be her words on which the success or failure of the mission would depend. She had also not expected the Sisters of Silence to speak. At last she managed,
"We have come to seek your aid." We? The Inquisition, which I represent. The Adeptus Astartes, who are fighting at this moment to save Nadiris. She paused for a moment. We is every citizen of every human world. The Imperium seeks your aid.
The woman stared at her. Her armor was crimson, so were the optics that had replaced her eyes. Her face was expressionless, as devoid of light as the world. Thenand estimated there were 50 Sisters of Silence present. Some wore helmets. Many did not. Their heads were clean-shaven, except for a single long rope of hair. Some bore electus of the Imperial Aquila on their brows. Ritual scars marked their cheeks. Almost all the sisters wore grills over the lower halves of their faces. Some had helms with ornate rebreathers that concealed their features entirely. They had new faces of metal. All of the designs connoted a form of silence, though one that found expression in actions so final they exceeded the power of mere words.
The Imperium seeks our help, said the warrior with a crimson stare.
She spoke with a flat, deathly tone.
I am Cavalinera Brassanas, Knight Abyssal of Purgatory Squad, and it has been many centuries since the Imperium made it clear the aid of my order was not desired. I find this request hard to credit.
And even more difficult to trust,
said a sister behind Brassanas. Her armor was black, her face was one of those entirely concealed, her voice resonated metallically behind the mask.
I agree with Knight Obsidian Dravina, said Brassanas.
The entire Imperium is besieged by orcs, Venan said. They have technology beyond anything we possess. They have destroyed whole worlds. They smashed the Imperial fists. The Imperium will fall without your aid.
No emotion, no answer. Time fell into the dark. There was a faint movement of the sisters' fingers. They were speaking to each other, Venan realized. She felt as if she were witnessing the discourse of tombs. They used their cant, she thought, but they speak too.
Why?
Brassanas said,
Perhaps it is time for it to fall.
Venan gaped, but the shock made pieces fall into place. The sisters had turned their backs on the Imperium, as they had turned from silence.
You renounced your vows, she said. Was it that easy to abandon the Imperium? Our vows were to the Emperor,
Brassanas replied,
and to the Imperium he created. The corruption you serve is not that Imperium. We still serve the Emperor. We stand guard against the Witch.
We do not recognize the simulacrum that has replaced the Emperor's dream, said Dravina.
That is the true betrayal,
Brassanas said.
Let it fall.
Let it fall,
Dravina repeated.
Let it fall,
the other sisters echoed.
Let it fall, let it fall.
The whispered chorus chilled Venand because it had the ring of justice. In this hall, there was moral authority of a kind never dreamed of in the great chamber. Venand thought of the High Lords and saw only the rightness of Brassanas's verdict. And yet, in that verdict, Venand saw the way forward.
Vulcan would have agreed with you, she said. Vulcan,
said Brassanas. Venand sensed a stir in the hall, though no one moved.
The Primarch had no love for the High Lords. He saw the corruption. He knew the High Lords and all their works to be worthy only of contempt. Yet he fought for this Imperium.
Vulcan was with you,
said Dravina.
Fought,
said Brassanas, emphasizing the past tense. Venand nodded.
He died fighting the orcs on Ulanor.
A gasp rippled through the theatre.
Vulcan is dead,
Dravina said, and her whisper was a mourning cry.
Vulcan is dead,
the other sisters repeated.
Vulcan is dead.
The words told, the echoes grieved.
Ulanor,
Brassanas said, sounding the words slowly.
The orcs have returned to Ulanor. Then perhaps the end has truly come.
Perhaps, said Venand, but Vulcan fought it.
Brassana said nothing. If the Imperium falls, if Terra falls, Venan pursued, what of the Golden Throne? Still nothing. What of your vow to the Emperor? And is this to be your legacy? The destruction of everything the Sisters of Silence have fought so hard to protect? Because you refuse to help when you possess the key to defeating the Orcs?
We possess the key, said Brassanus. Explain yourself.
The Orc witches, Venan said. Destroy them, and we destroy the beast. Brassanus stared at her for several long moments. Then she said,
We will deliberate. You will be taken to the lower gates to await our decision.
No! Venan shouted. There could be no deliberation. There was no choice. There was only duty. How long will you deliberate? Until the Orcs tear down your gates? Brassanus watched her. I too have been betrayed, Venan said. I have seen the corruption firsthand. I know exactly what it is I am defending, and I will defend it to my last breath. I will not let the Imperium fall into silence.
Sacred or profane,
Dravina said to Brassanus,
we must choose our silence.
Brassanus nodded. She threw her cloak back over her shoulders, revealing the power claw on her left arm. Now there were other echoes in the hall. They were the ratcheting clanks of magazines slammed home and the impact of boot heels on stone. One by one, the unforgiving saints of the Imperium began their preparations for war. The Orc engineer's gun unleashed a torrent of energy. The coruscating beam struck Thane, surrounded him, and lifted him from the deck. It threw him back between two immense spinning columns. Each was 10 meters in diameter and grooved. They moved back and forth along a horizontal slot in the deck, grinding together, then pulling back. Thane bounced off the pillar to his left, then fell into the ragged tear in the deck. He clung to the edge. Below him, the darkness shrieked with massive, incomprehensible machinery. If he fell, he would be reduced to pulp and splinters of ceramite in moments. On either side, the spinning pillars closed in. The residual energy from the gun's strike pulsed and jittered through his armor, and it would not obey his muscles' commands. He held on to the ledge, but he couldn't move. The columns spun nearer. There were 3 Orc engineers in the control center of the Titan. Abathar's speculation had proven correct. He had led Squad Gladius upwards through the Orc Titan's head, winding through corridors tangled with power conduits and clanging with exposed gears, to this point, just above the energy cannon eye. A hatch opened in the forehead of the Titan to reveal the land below and the mountain ahead. The space was vast, yet crowded, a maze of pistons and chains, of machinery that spread like a cancer, yet somehow moved the Titan forward and directed the aim of its weapons. The engineers labored in a multi-leveled nest of levers and arcing power sources. Each Orc worked at its level, but when Gladius attacked, 2 of the engineers retaliated with energy weapons. The 3rd clambered up and down the control levels, frantically throwing switches and working the dark machinic sorcery that kept the Titan advancing. The force field, protecting the engineers, held back Straton's shells. Warfist raced through the chamber, gutting the greenskins commanded by the engineers and slicing cabling in half. The 2nd engineer hit Abathar with his beam weapon. The tech marine was seized by a gravity whip, and the Orc propelled him out of the hatch. The claw of his servo arm clamped around a thick cable as he flew, and he hung on. The Orc held the trigger down, its weapon glowing with heat. It shook Abathar back and forth, trying to dislodge his grip and send him falling far to the ground below. A score of Orcs had rushed Forcas, overwhelming him with sheer mass, pushing him into machinery where he had no leverage. As Thane struggled to pull himself up, he heard a feral roar. Greenskins staggered back. The Blood Angel tore through them with his chainsword, and a howling fury Thane had sensed just beneath the surface of his rigid, pious calm. His face was covered in the enemy's blood. He raised a fist, surrounded by a halo of scarlet warp energy. Both Orc engineers trained their weapons in his direction. They fired at the same moment he unleashed his incinerating blast. The 2 forces collided halfway across the chamber. The explosion was blinding. The Titan tilted violently to one side, the deck slanted. It was enough for Thane to push himself out of the trap. The columns clashed together behind him,
and Thane rounded on them, facing a wall of grinding, whirling metal. He threw a melter bomb at the intersection of the pillars and thumbed the detonator at the same moment. The explosive went off before it could be sucked into the vortex. There was another dazzling flash. Thane stumbled away, regaining control of his limbs. The columns spun into the melting heat of the explosive. They fused with each other, and their huge mass pulled them in the opposite directions of their spin. A huge, shuddering jolt ran through the Titan. From the decks below came the sound of screams and the vibration of blasts. The warring lightning faded between Phorcus and the orcs. The Blood Angel was still standing, but his armor was badly scorched. His face was a mass of burned meat. He staggered forward, still snarling. One of the engineers had fallen, smoke rising from its blackened corpse. Abathar pulled himself back inside the Titan's head. He charged the engineer's nest and swung his power axe at the straining shield. Warfist looped around and rammed his shoulder into the field at the same moment. Straighten's shells never let up. The two remaining greenskin engineers had just enough time to know what was coming and roar a brutish denial. They were dead moments later. The molten bedlam of the columns screamed. Its fire spread along the cables. They melted. They convulsed like maddened serpents. Electrical fury lanced through the space, and the fused columns spun still faster as they shattered restraints. The whirl reached beyond them. It took the chamber. It seized the Titan. Thane felt a world roar into a vortex. The orc Titan was going mad. The entrance behind Thane, the one through which Squad Gladius had entered the control hall, had been destroyed by the maelstrom of the columns. There was another one in the far wall.
"Seal the door!"
Thane shouted into the vox. There would be no chance for any orc to attempt to regain control of the Titan. Straighten and Abathar ran through the monstrous clamor of the growing destruction. Abathar melted the door along its seams, while Straighten placed charges across the ceiling. Thane and Warfist turned to Phorcus. The Blood Angel's snarls were inaudible in the thunder of disintegrating metal. His movements were sluggish. They guided him towards the hatch. The door burst open, the crush of orcs overwhelming the seals before Abathar could complete them. He turned plasma cutter and power axe against the horde. He was surrounded by a flood of blood and green skin muscle.
"Do it now!"
Thane heard him vox Straighten. The ultramarine set off the charges. The blasts brought down shrieking machinery and slabs of metal. They crushed flesh. Abathar disappeared under tons of burning wreckage with a horde. The deck tilted 30 degrees. It threw Phorcus, Thane, and Warfist against the outside wall. Straighten grabbed a spur of rubble, kept his feet, and hauled. Metal shifted. The center of the rubble glowed white. It trembled and then began to collapse from the heat of the plasma cutter. Abathar reared out of the mass. His left arm hung limp, but he punched at his prison with servo arm and axe. The deck rocked back, then to the sides. The rotation grew more violent. The spin gathered momentum. The columns had become a blinding mass of self-destruction, and still they spun and spun and spun. The flames were everywhere. There would be no salvation for the Titan. Soon, there would be none for the Death Watch either.
"Gafsiel," Thane boxed. "We need extraction. Make for the crown of the Titan."
"Understood."
Warfist went through the hatch first. He hacked at the shielding with his power claws, carving a path up. Phorcus sagged against Thane, but he had ceased snarling, and he reached out and grabbed the sides of the hatch. A cloud of fire swept over them. Blinded, Thane felt Phorcus begin to pull, and he added his strength to the Blood Angel's, guiding him into the air.
"Straighten," he voxed. "Abathar."
He looked back, but he could no longer see them. The control chamber was darkness and flame and heaving movement.
"We are here," Straighten answered. "We are following."
Thane climbed outside. Fire erupted from the eyes of the Titan. Above him, Warfist was helping Phorcus towards the crown. Thane waited until he saw Straighten emerge from flame and smoke, then Abathar behind him. Then he climbed. The mind of the Titan was dying, and its body responded with ever greater violence. The massive cannons were still firing, but the Titan's arms were caught in a pendulum motion, the swings growing longer and more wild. The monster's gait was a drunken, turning sway. It was a mountain falling into a dance of death. Squad Gladius clung to the skull in storm. The penitent Roth skimmed the top of the Titan. Cafsiel flew the gunship in tight circles as the Space Marines reached the peak. Warfist jumped through the side door as the Thunderhawk went by. He reached down for Forkas on the next pass. Thane held the Psyker up. He was barely responsive.
"Raise your arms, brother," Thane said. "Raise them in triumph."
Something in Forkas heard. He obeyed. Warfist grasped his forearms and hauled him aboard. Thane and Straton followed when Cafsiel brought the gunship around again. One more pass now, one more brother. Thane and Straton crouched at the door to aid Abatha. The Tech Marine flexed his knees and began his leap. Metal buckled, the crown of the Titan collapsed into the vortex, shields turned to jagged teeth. Abatha fell into the gnashing metal. He stretched his servo arm up as he plummeted. Thane seized the claw. The imploding skull dragged Abatha down and sought to pull Thane from the gunship. Straton clasped the arm, and they both pulled. Thane felt the jaws crush something human. The disintegration of bone shook through Abathar's frame and into Thane's arms.
"We have you, brother!"
he yelled in defiance of the dying beast. Then they did have him. They pulled him free. They dragged him aboard. His right leg was gone below the thigh. The Thunderhawk pulled away from the Titan. The monster was out of control now. It staggered through the mass of the Orc army, crushing infantry beneath it. Its arms were a monstrous flailing, and the devastation of its guns spread across the battlefield, punching new craters in the ground as well as the mountainside. The Orc invasion force turned on its own weapon. The caldera became a battlefield, a cauldron of explosives as the Orcs struggled against the awful power of their technology, gone mad. The penitent Roth flew towards the fortress. Forkas was unconscious. Warfist and Straton wrestled him into a grav harness. Abathar was awake. His blood slicked the deck, but his Laraman cells had already slowed the flow, coagulation building a scab over the stump. The femoral artery had pinched itself closed. Thane helped the Tech Marine to a bench, then turned to Veritas. The Inquisitor had been sitting silently in the troop hold.
"Well?"
he asked. Veritas shook his head.
"I don't know."
"The enemy is distracted," said Warfist. "If they're going to break out..."
He stopped.
"What is that?"
he said. Thane joined him at the viewing block. The mountain just below the base of the fortress was moving.
"A gate,"
he said. A seam of light appeared in the darkness. Walls of rock rumbled apart, revealing a vehicle bay beyond. Silver illumination bathed the cliff face. Three armored vehicles advanced from the depths of the bay.
"Rhinos," Thane said.
"How do they expect to reach the ground?"
Warfist demanded.
"That's a sheer..."
He stopped. Thane's eyes widened.
"If those are rhinos," Warfist said,
"why are they flying?"
Engine exhausts burned red on the flanks and undersides of the rhinos. The vehicles streaked down the mountainside, then leveled off as they approached the ground. The squadron flew over the Orcs, storm bolters cutting a swathe of fire through them. Thane witnessed impossible, awe-inspiring technology. And it was Imperial. Exulting, he said,
"They are flying because they are transporting myths."